Trump is currently facing a fraud trial for inflating his value, his personal value, his net worth, to secure more money from banks. So he's going through a trial. Now you might ask yourself, well, who's suing him, Michael? The insurance companies? The real estate companies? The banks that he got the loans from? Nope. The state is pressing charges, when in reality, there's no victims for this crime. The worst part, the judge who shouldn't even be involved. All about this and more today on The Michael Wilson Show.
From the American Beacon Studios, this is The Michael Wilson Show.
Trump is facing a lawsuit for inflating his personal value to secure bigger loans from banks. The problem with the lawsuit of this kind is that it's suing on behalf of someone who has no problem with what happened. The banks are not suing, which if there was wrongdoing and they believed that, they would sue, right? Banks are all about making money, so why didn't they sue? Because there was no point in suing. The loans have all been paid back, the banks are happy, and yet the state, the taxpayer-funded state, has taken it upon themselves to press charges against Donald J. Trump. If you cannot see that this is politically motivated and political persecution, then I literally don't know what to tell you, because you'll probably never see it. This is as clear as day, the most evident example of it. Apart from all the other stuff that's happened, this is pretty clear, right? It's like, so he cheated to get more money from the banks. So the banks are suing. No, the banks aren't suing him. They don't care. They got their money. They're good with it. They gave out a loan. They got their loan back. Capiche. We're good. The state said, no, you're not good. We're going to butt into your business and sue you because you're Donald Trump. I know Biden's sitting over there getting millions from Ukraine and millions from China for selling his influence, which is incredibly illegal and very, very, very borderline treasonous. But buddy, you cheated the banks and they don't care, so we're suing you for them. That is literally what's happening. For years, Trump said there was a witch hunt going on against him. The media, the government, the feds all targeted him and called them out for it. He constantly said, no, this is exactly what's happening. This is a witch hunt because they do not want me in office. This trial just continues proving what Trump and millions of people already know. The system is rigged against those who stand up against the narrative, right? It started with the whole Russian hoax story, which, by the way, the FBI propagated knowing it was fake. Who got in trouble for that? Nobody. Nobody got in trouble for that. They didn't even get a slap on the wrist. I would say that it was just a slap on the wrist. It wasn't. There was not even a slap. It was literally potato, potato. It happened. Oops. Sorry. Big deal. Move on. Or the FBI that hid the Hunter laptop story during the 2020 election, which very, very much could have easily covered up those votes that Trump lost by. So time and time again, it has been a witch hunt. And that's ignoring all the media stuff. That's just talking about the FBI. That's just the federal government. That's just the DOJ, right? Like that's only the fourth branch, the bureaucratic form of government that's doing that. That's just talking about them. They covered up stuff. They hid stuff from the American people. They made stuff up and ran with it, which almost cost Trump the election in 2016 and cost him the election in 2020. And here we are, again, him being prosecuted for something that no one's upset about. But it actually gets even worse. The judge, Judge Arthur Engoron, which is actually a really cool name. I didn't even realize that till I just read it. But Arthur Engoron is a pretty, that sounds like a fantasy novel, like great king who faced the dragon, Arthur Engoron. Anyways, he's not only biased, but he's incredibly corrupt. A camera in the trial has shown the judge smiling and waving at the camera as if this whole thing is a fun circus for him, which in and of itself isn't necessarily like a deal breaker, but it's like when the camera's showing an entire courtroom and it's a very serious occasion, he's over there like, hey guys, I'm on camera. I'm famous for prosecuting Donald Trump. It's like, clearly there's a problem here. Because a judge is supposed to be an impartial judge of the situation. And when he is excited to be the judge in a case, you can just kind of sit there and be like, okay, yeah, clearly there's some partiality here. I don't know if any of you have ever been in a courtroom or watched a show even on TV even that shows a courtroom. But when the judge is sitting there kind of like, nodding and like, yeah, okay, it's pretty clear that something else is going on, that the judge isn't just sitting there impartial and serious, which is the literal job that he was hired to do. This is just a big game to him, clearly, just from that one little camera clip. But if that were all, you'd probably be looking at me like, well, yeah, that's not great, but what are you talking about, biased and corrupt, really, because he waved and smiled at the camera? No, that's just an add-on. A video has resurfaced from 2015 of this guy where he gave a lecture to some college students showing what his beliefs are regarding his position. So let's take a look at that video, and then we can come back and have this discussion a little further.
Now, I'm going to say something controversial, even though I'm being taped. Juries get it wrong a lot. That's my own opinion. I do only civil trials, personal injury cases, contract disputes. But I've had situations where, like, oh, my heaven's sake. How could they have thought that? Well, I have a tool that I can deal with that. It's called judgment notwithstanding the verdict. I can say there is no possible way that a reasonable jury would have reached that conclusion. And, all right, am I following the law or am I making law? Okay, I'm following law. I'm an impartial referee. But it's hard to factor out my own emotions. And I have tools. Somebody can say, well, Your Honor, you have to throw out this case because it's just like another case. Well, is it just like another case? What if the defendant was wearing a red sweater instead of a blue sweater? Oh, and by the way, I worked for the Columbia Daily Spectator for a couple of weeks. What happened was I went there every day and I wrote a few stories. One I got criticized on because I wrote that some Ku Klux Klanners had murdered some people, and I was told, you can't say that. How do we know? You weren't there. Well, that was what everybody thought. Anyway, yeah, we should have absolute immunity. What if we defame somebody? That's how it usually comes up. You know, you call somebody a murderer or a heroin addict, that sort of thing, a pedophile. And if it's done in court, yeah, I think we should have absolute immunity.
So there's a lot there, right? There's several major issues for this guy to be a judge. Not only is he clearly unserious and biased, but he believes that he should use his power to overturn the ruling of a jury if he deems that decision unreasonable. He says that any time a jury makes a decision that no reasonable person would make, it's his duty to overturn such a decision. The problem? That is literally the entire reason that we have juries and not just one judge. Because a judge would make a different decision. Why do you think that we have juries in the first place? It is so that reasonable people who aren't biased, who are your peers, have the opportunity to hear you out and make a decision. That is the entire point of a jury. He is saying that I will overturn the jury because the jury did why we have what a jury does. That is literally what he just said in this clip. To overturn a jury's decision not only deems juries entirely unnecessary, but it asks a very compelling question. And I'll pose this question to you. If a jury of my peers decides what they deem reasonable, right? Because if they're making the decision, that's the reasonable decision in their opinion. If they make that decision, who gets to decide whether that judgment was unreasonable? This is the same reason why vaguely worded laws are so dangerous, right? If the government says that no one can buy a gun, if the government deems them irresponsible and dangerous, right? Red flag laws. Who decides what that means? Who decides, right? Any judge with a personal bias against the Second Amendment, is that who decides if someone is irresponsible and dangerous, right? In the case of New York, they'd say it's anybody who had, you know, social media history of being violent or being racist or bigoted. Well, what's a bigot? Well, in their opinion, anyone who opposes trans rights for kids. Therefore, in their opinion, I should not be able to own a gun because I'm irresponsible and dangerous, right? That is the problem with vaguely worded laws, and it's the same problem that this judge clearly has, which is when you say, if a jury does something unreasonable, I should overturn it. Unreasonable in your opinion. You're not the jury. The jury made their decision, and if you overturn that decision, you're not just saying that the jury is unreasonable. You're saying that you are the single arbiter of truth, of reasonability, which is not only wrong, but it's incredibly dangerous. There's no two ways around that. There is no world where a judge says, I overturn juries that are unreasonable, that is safe. It just doesn't work. Because if that's the truth, not only are we faced with the fact that juries no longer should exist, right? Because if judges are the only ones who know reasonability, then we shouldn't have a jury at all. I mean, if juries are only there for when they make decisions that the judge agrees with, then there's no reason to have the juries. The judge is going to make the ultimate decision anyway. But it just doesn't add up at all, because then judges single-handedly decide what is reasonable. And that doesn't work for anybody, especially when you have the kind of judge that just wants to throw Trump in the gutter, right? He also admits in this video, by the way, this is not necessarily related to this case, but he also admits in that video that he ignores precedents, saying, well, this isn't exactly the same case. That guy wore a red sweater. This guy wore a blue one. So clearly we have to look at the, I can look at these two cases as different cases. That's not what precedence means. And I'm not a lawyer, and I know that. Maybe one day I'll be a lawyer. If more judges like this pop up, I guess I need to balance it out. But that's what precedence is. It has nothing to do with the color of somebody's sweater, buddy, which you know because you're a judge who studies the law. So he ignores precedence. He is willing to overturn the rule of law. He has no basis and no business being a judge. This is not what a judge does. This judge is a biased, power-hungry man who's shown he's willing to overturn the rule of law. This whole trial, as I've said before, continues to prove what we've known for years. This whole thing is a big witch hunt, and it only makes Trump's base more fired up for him. If you want people to not vote for him, actually get him on something bad that he did with an unbiased judge. Stop showing us that courts are untrustworthy and then being like, but you don't believe and trust the courts? No. The judge that you're using to prosecute your political opponent, by the way, has admitted he will overturn the rule of law. So why would we trust your court system? If you want to get Trump to not be in, I'm giving you advice. Get him on something real. Not something that no one cared about until 2 seconds ago. Get him on something real and get a judge that is legitimately unbiased. That's the only way to do it. And even then, you've already shown us that the courts are untrustworthy. So even then, you may be too late. And you're not going to do that because there's nothing real and there's no unbiased judges, clearly. All right. Next up, we got a video making the rounds. This is of a prankster, a YouTube prankster, which there are. These people should not exist, but they do. He gets shot. So let's watch that video.
What?
Quit thinking about my twinkle.
What's that?
Quit thinking about my twinkle.
No.
Quit thinking about my twinkle.
Get out of my business. Walk off. Stop.
Quit thinking about my twinkle.
Stop.
All right, so the guy was playing, I don't even know what it said, but something clearly derogatory as it was bleeped out for half of whatever the message was. And he holds the phone right in this guy's face, right? Playing this looped clip of something very awful right in his face. And the guy says, stop, once. And then he pushes the guy's hand down and says, stop again. The guy raises his hand back up and pushes. So the guy starts to walk away and says, stop twice more, trying to push the guy away as he leaves. And the guy is following him, holding him close to his face. So he turns and he shoots the guy. Justified? This video has made a lot of people very angry. Many people are blaming the shooter for what he did. I've had to debate several people on this point. And here's what I'll say about it. If someone is harassing me, following me around, playing cuss-filled words right in my face after I've repeatedly told me to stop, and he follows me as I'm trying to leave, as I'm trying to de-escalate, and he escalates it further by following me, after I've repeatedly told him to stop, I have the full right to shoot him in self-defense because he's a raging lunatic and I have no idea what he's going to do next. If he can't respect my no and he's harassing me and following me, how am I going to sit there and say, nah, it's just a video, we're good. I don't care. No, he's deranged. He's not respecting my personal boundaries. No, he's following me. He's a stalker. He's a harasser. No. People are crazy. I cannot know what he's doing or why he's doing it. All I know is that some weird stranger is getting in my face and following me after I told him to stop. I said this during the Rittenhouse trial, and I'll say it again here. You don't have to believe me on this, although you should, but you should definitely trust the jury in this case. The jury found him not guilty on the count of shooting the so-called prankster. The guy survived, but I honestly believe that some of these pranksters need some sort of punishment because this is not an uncommon occurrence. Pranks used to be funny. When I was like 12, the pranks on YouTube, I'm not just saying like they used to be funny and now I don't find pranks funny. I'm saying the kind of pranks that used to make the rounds were funny pranks, right? like somebody opens their car door and a water balloon, you know, falls that was, they had tied to something mechanism where when you open the car door, a water balloon hits you, you know, that kind of just harmless fun. Like, okay, yeah, that's still not nice, but it's kind of a funny prank. Following around playing derogatory language after they've told you to stop and harassing them isn't funny. There's a British prankster, for example, who's gone into people's houses, sat on their couch. He'll say, oh, that's a cute dog, or that's a cute kid. And then he'll take the kid or the dog and run away. He gives it back, obviously, but he'll basically make you believe that he's kidnapping your dog or your child. Why are these people allowed to do what they do? Nobody knows the answer to that. And yet they get millions of views from doing it. They're never punished. So of course they're incentivized to continue harassing and harming people. I'm not saying that I personally would have shot this guy. That's not at all what I'm communicating. What I am saying is that these pranksters need some sort of wake-up call because this has gone far enough. I am sick and tired of there being in the news some prankster who did some prank that caused harm to somebody. In numerous different countries, you have people kidnapping kids for clicks. People that do dangerous, people that pull out a fake gun and be like, hey, give me your money. Oh, it's just a prank, dude. Oh, I'm going to touch your girl's butt. It's just a prank, dude. It's not just a prank. It's not a prank. I may not shoot you, but if you touch my girl or you take my child, if you take my child, I probably will shoot you. But if you touch my child or my girl or you're harassing me, even if I don't shoot you, you're going to face physical repercussions for that. Point blank. There's no world where you don't. Maybe I'm not like most people, but there's no world where you do those things and you just walk away unscathed. Absolutely not. These people are criminals. I'm sorry, that's just what they are. And even the jury realizes that. Speaking of crime, and far enough, let's talk about Philadelphia. So this Philadelphia journalist was shot in his home. His name was Josh Kruger. He was a journalist in Philly. He was shot 7 times in the chest inside of his home. We don't know who the perpetrator was. We don't know if it was someone he knew that he let in that had a rash moment, or if it was a burglar. We don't know. While it's always sad when someone dies, it's also worth noting what led to this point. Let's read some of his writing, specifically on Twitter, to see what his opinion on crime was, and I'm going to quote him on some of these. He said, look, it's that lawless land of liberals in Philly where shootings are dropping to levels not seen in years. So there he's basically saying that, yeah, it's safe here. Here's another one. Some idiot just said you're more likely to get shot and killed than die of COVID in Philly to make some insensitive rhetorical point for his side. Folks, 4 times as many Philadelphians have died of COVID than gunshots this year. I understand math is hard, but do better. Here's another one. Bro, speak for your block. Mine isn't ruined. The city isn't ruined. And just because Larry Krasner keeps winning in landslides doesn't mean Philly is a heap of cinders and ashes, no matter how much people say. Like the rest of the country, we are dealing with upticks in crime. Earlier this year, he said, I'm changing the locks. People are crazy. Drugs can help, but can also create or exacerbate mental health problems. I can already hear the armchair advice brigade saying what I should have done. To me, guns escalate and dramatically increase risk of injury or death, even in home or self-defense situations. In this case, a burglary. You can't be Yosemite Sam just because you're afraid. And on September 30th, so just a few days ago, he replied to a tweet from Scott Adams, author of the Dilbert comics, semi-conservative. Scott said that Democrat policies like Biden's proposals would kill someone. He said, I guarantee within a year, under Biden, you'll be dead. Sure, that's not, you know, he's not predicting that everyone in America will die, but he is saying that these kind of policies are the things that lead to death. The journalist replied on September 30th to that tweet and said, the Dilbert dude is like Nostradamus. Look at this prediction from 2020. Wow, eerie. Super sarcastic, right? Then he got shot under these kind of policies. Now, yes, while this was certainly a tragic shooting that should have never happened, Josh practically invited it upon himself. He was unwilling to use a weapon to defend himself, as he clearly stated, and he clearly supported policies that led to this soft-on-crime mentality. Drugs can be good. I mean, come on. We need rehabilitation. We need kindness, empathy. This is the kind of guy that he was, right? No retribution, no justice. Soft-on-crime policies. This mentality is the same reason for the prankster story we just talked about. You know why there's so many pranksters on YouTube that are allowed to get away with this stuff? Because no one's being made an example of. No one is being punished for this stuff. I mean, like the guy in England, right? The British guy, he literally did. He went to jail. You know how long he went to jail? No time at all. He was in and out of there. That is what leads to these people. They can get millions of views, and they know that thing's going to happen to them. This is the same reason for the Jordan Neely story, if you remember. The guy that was being a lunatic on the train, threatening to kill people. Why do you think we got to that place? Why wasn't Neely already in jail or in a mental institution? This soft-on-crime mentality leads to more crime. When people who are willing to be criminal are told, if you're a criminal, we don't care, do what you got to do, what do you think they're going to do? They're going to do criminal things. This is, again, and I could list a million examples here. How about we talked about this story before? The Nevada teenagers who ran over the old bicycler and killed him while driving the stolen car, and then laughed about it, and then said, I'm not going to go to jail. It's going to be a slap on the wrist, because they already know how the system works. And that is how the system works. That is how the system has always worked. Well, it hasn't always worked that way. We used to have real justice, but it's how it's worked for a while now, especially in blue states. And it's how people like Josh want the system to work. But then it impacts them and it's too late. Our country has started preaching that criminals just need rehab, that a criminal is just a normal person who deserves the same dignity as everybody else. Wrong. A criminal deserves justice in every single scenario. There is not a single instance where a criminal does not deserve justice. The definition of justice may change. We may say justice means this or that for each scenario, but justice is always deserved. There's been looting going on, by the way, in Philadelphia. This isn't just one random gun shooting. There's been looting going on. AOC, we've talked about her so many times. I almost feel bad making fun of her, because it's clear that she never should have left bartending. That isn't to even offend bartenders. I don't even think she's qualified to do that, to be honest. Maybe if she closed her mouth and just made the drinks, perhaps. But she has come out for her part and said that she understands the looting in Philadelphia, because sometimes you just can't afford bread for your family, and she understands if you have to do what you got to do. The problem with that sentiment? They looted Apple stores and upscale clothing stores, stealing iPhones and Apple Watches, probably knowing that the worst they would get is a slap on the wrist. So I am sick and tired of being soft on crime. There is ever a reason to commit a crime. And there's certainly no reason that we shouldn't prosecute them to the fullest extent of the law. And when we don't, we get things like this. And the people know, or they expect, that nothing will happen to them, because most likely, it won't. All right, if you've had enough of that, let's talk about the good news of the day. And that is the Dodgers pitcher that has finally spoken out. Let's watch this video. It's a little bit long, but bear with me. I think it'll be worth it. Let's watch this video.
Next victim, star pitcher for the Dodgers. A text Lindsey Hill sent to a friend before she ever even met me. What should I steal? She asked another in reference to visiting my house for the first time. The answer? Take his money. So how might that work? I'm going to his house Wednesday, she said. I already have my hooks in. You know how I roll. Then, after the first time we met, net worth is 51 mil, she said. Better secure the bag, was the response. But how was she going to do that? Need daddy to choke me out, she said. Being an absolute whore to try to get in on his 51 million, read another text. Then, after the second time we met, former Padres pitcher Jacob Nix told her, you got to get this bag. I'll give you 50,000, Lindsay replied. Her AA sponsor asked her at one point, do you feel a tiny bit guilty? Not really, she replied. Since then, her legal team has approached me multiple times about coming to a financial settlement. But as I have done since day one, I refuse to pay her even a single cent. In August of 2021, Lindsey Hill's claims were heard in court. And during those legal proceedings, critical information was deliberately and unlawfully concealed from me and my legal team. Information like this video, which was taken by Lindsey Hill herself, the morning after she claimed she was brutally attacked, emotionally traumatized, and desperate to get away from me. And now we have the metadata, so there can be no dispute. It was taken mere minutes before she left my house on the morning of May 16th, 2021, without my knowledge or consent, of course. In it, you can see her lying in bed next to me while I'm sleeping, smirking at the camera without a care in the world, or any marks on her face. I think it paints a pretty clear picture of what actually happened the evening of May 15th, and why the video was originally concealed from us. After hearing the evidence available to her, Judge Diana Gold Saltman found that Lindsey Hill had misled the court. She found her claims to be materially misleading. She denied her request for a domestic violence restraining order, and she found that no sexual assault or non-consensual conduct took place. Now, some of you might not know about restraining order hearings. I know I didn't. But I've since learned that it's extremely rare for a request for a restraining order to be denied because the standard of proof that you need to obtain one is extremely low. So you can make of that what you will. The fact is, I was never arrested, I was never charged with a crime, and I won the only legal proceeding that took place without my side of the story even being heard. And most importantly, as I've said from day one, I never sexually assaulted Lindsay Hill, or anyone else for that matter. So I sued her, which prompted her to countersue me. Quite frankly, regardless of the outcome in court, I've paid significantly more in legal fees than Lindsay Hill could ever pay me in her entire life. And I knew that would be the case going in. But the lawsuit was never about the money for me. It was the only way for me to obtain critical information to clear my name. The discovery process in that lawsuit recently concluded, at which point Lindsay Hill's legal team again came to us with another proposal to resolve the case. This time, however, they weren't seeking any money from me. Having received much of the information that had been hidden from us, a small portion of which I've referenced here, I was willing to agree to the terms proposed. Both parties would drop their respective lawsuits, and neither of us would pay either side any money. I also retained my right to speak publicly about the case, something I have not been at liberty to do since June of 2021. So, as of today, both lawsuits have been settled. Now, over the last 2 years, I've been forced to defend my integrity and my reputation in a very public setting, but hopefully this is the last time I have to do so, as I'd prefer to just remain focused on doing my job, winning baseball games and entertaining fans around the world. So today, I'm happy to be moving on with my life.
So there you have it. This kind of thing has been happening for decades now. And unfortunately, it doesn't often go this way. A lot of men can't afford to have phenomenal legal representation. A lot of times there is just enough evidence for this to happen. Often men are found guilty regardless of the evidence or the lack of evidence, sentenced for crimes that they never committed. So many examples I could pull from of men that were thrown in jail for years, and halfway through the woman admits, yeah, I lied, and you know what happens? The guy gets out, and that's it. This is incredible news. Firstly, it does show us that good can still win in the end in a courtroom. With everything going on these days with malicious prosecution, which we've talked about throughout this episode, seeing a story with a happy ending in court is always a good thing. This shows that we also can still follow God's law, which is rejecting false witness from testimony, throwing them out. Even though this is the good news segment, I need to interject something, and that is that this woman, and all the women like her, of which there are many, deserve justice for what they've done. She may not receive money and may have legal fees, but at the end of the day, she's faced zero repercussions for lying and trying to ruin a man's life, trying to bankrupt him, trying to drag his reputation to the mud and get him in so much trouble that he will never recover. That is what she did. I'd settle, personally, for any punishment that the woman gets, which the punishment should be, that whatever she was accusing the man of and whatever the punishment of that thing is, she gets that punishment instead. If that is 40 years in jail for it and all of her money, cool. All her money's gone, 40 years in jail. I'm good with that. And any woman who's not relaying false witness should be good with that. Because the only reason that you wouldn't be good with punishment if you're lying is if you're lying. So everyone should be able to agree on a punishment like that, right? I think a lot of men have gone through this. And I think one of the big problems is that it's less talked about, right? Like we say rape is so bad, and it is. Absolutely is. But I would say that this is equally as bad, if not worse, in my opinion. And I'm happy to have that conversation with people who are offended by what I say. Because if you're raped, sure, it traumatizes you. It's awful. It is a horrendous evil. When you falsely accuse a man of rape, he goes bankrupt. He loses his life. He goes to jail, where he spends 30, 40, 50 years in jail. It literally takes his entire life away. Because even after he gets out, when he's 60 years old, he can't get a job. He has no money. His life is literally over because of a lie. In my opinion, that is a worse punishment than being raped. Point blank. Men are the physically stronger gender, as we're all aware. And so typically a man's version of evil is physical damage, right? Something like rape, sexual assault, these sorts of things. A woman is typically more deceptive, manipulative, seductive. An evil woman, that is, right? Like, for every evil man, there's an evil woman. And an evil woman uses the tools that are her disposal. Her disposal tools are not something like physical strength for something like rape or assault. The tools at her disposal are her mind, her body, and she uses those tools. That's the other reason that this man got himself in the position he was in, and I need to talk about this. Because the blame isn't just on the woman. I mean, certainly from the legal perspective, right, it is. Even from a moral perspective, the blame for lying and trying to ruin his life is entirely on her, 100%. But I'm saying the reason this scenario was able to happen in the first place. Samson learned this lesson well with Delilah, if you know the story. God told him not to be with her, yada, yada, yada. He was with her anyways, and it led to his downfall, right? Because a bad woman is worse than anything else you can possibly go through as a man. If you have a woman that isn't confident in you, that is willing to accuse you, that is willing to ruin your life, that's worse than pretty much any other decision you possibly could have made. And when you invite random beautiful women into your bed, I'm sure Delilah was pretty. I'm sure that this woman was beautiful. When you invite random beautiful women into your bed, you have to understand that there are consequences for that. Not just consequences from God, but natural consequences of that. They may not be false accusations of rape, or maybe they will be. But there will be consequences nonetheless, because what you're doing is immoral. And not only is it immoral, even ignoring that, it's just stupid. It just makes no sense. And by the time you're 25, 30 years old, you realize it never made any sense in the first place. That you were just making bad decisions because you thought it was fun. And it leads to situations like this. Because you know who doesn't get accused? You know who doesn't get accused of stuff like this? People that got married young. People that only had one partner. People that fell in love, have faith in God, and were only with one woman. So when they do get accused, right? Let's say they do. Their wife can say, no, he wasn't there. He was with me. No, he wasn't there. He was with me. A man who never puts himself in a position to even be accused would never find himself in the situation. You'll find that every man that is accused is typically promiscuous. He's typically going to parties, being caught in those situations. And this isn't to say he deserves to be falsely accused at all. That's a terrible evil, as I've already said, should be punished to the fullest extent of any possible law. But you have like Russell Brand, right? Being accused of sexual assault without evidence. And yet he fully admits that he was promiscuous in his younger days. He was. And that is what landed him in this position in the first place. Because had he not been promiscuous, had he had one woman who he married, these accusations couldn't even exist. If you're not going to parties and drinking and putting yourself in positions where those claims can come out, you'll be safe from those claims. Find a good woman. Marry her. Stay with her for the rest of your life, and you'll find you won't have to worry about false witness. Some of the people in the red pill movement, which a lot of them I'm on board with, but a lot of them have spoken out against marrying these days, but I'm all for marriage. Absolutely. Marry young. Marry the woman God has with her, and succeed with your partner for life. Do that. That's the best news that you'll ever have. And yes, this has been good news. Because despite what he did, despite the sin that he committed, a false witness was found out. And while certainly there could be better news as to what she was prosecuted with after that point, they did come to a settlement, and he's allowed to speak out against this kind of evil, and we're allowed to see it firsthand. We're allowed to see good come of it. We're allowed to see a man who didn't have his life ruined, who, yes, the reputation was defended, who he's able to speak out against it and to tell the truth and to have an audience that he can do that with. And that is incredible news. So until next time, goodbye.